This chapel message is brought to you by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations.
So I do have a passion for bringing the women of the Bible to off the back burner and into the forefront so that we can get to know them and recognize that they made significant contributions. The fact that they are in the scriptures, especially those who are named, tells us that the authors had a very specific intent, and that was for us to know them. So I want today for you to join me in using your holy imagination, and I'd like to bring to light one of those women today. So if you would use your holy imagination with me, I imagine that she was an elegant woman. I suspect she was in her middle age. Perhaps she was a widow. Perhaps she has a husband, although if she did, he's not mentioned. Perhaps she had children, but if she did, they're not mentioned. I see her as a very busy woman, the kind of woman that you and I probably already know, who gets more done in a day than most of us get done in a week. She was always flitting around doing something productive, doing something that made a difference. I think she was very practical, but not so practical that she wasn't also extravagant in her own way. I imagine that she probably wore brightly colored clothing, that brought her a lot of joy, not only in the clothing that she wore, but in the clothing that she made. Her hard work made her a woman of some substantial means. She was probably not nobility in any way, shape, or form, but she was a financially successful woman who had a home large enough that it had an upper room, a place for gathering. And I imagine that it was a place that was bustling at times. Always food on the table and always a warm greeting at the door. But don't let her smiling, warm eyes deceive you. Behind this woman, behind those eyes, is a fiercely protective woman, a woman who was a defender of the weak. If you haven't figured out who I'm talking about yet, I'm talking about Tabitha. And Tabitha is who I call an Ezer woman of charity. Tabitha is one of many women that I refer to as Ezer women. And if Connor is on this morning, he'll have to forgive me for my very poor Hebrew. I speak it in an English accent. So an Ezer woman, and the last time I had the opportunity to speak, I talked about Shifra and Pua being Ezer women because they were rescuers. The word Ezer in Hebrew comes from Genesis 2:18, where God says he was going to create a helper for the man. And that word helper is Ezer, and it's used of God, not just the woman. It's used of God, and it means strong rescuer or strong power. So Tabitha is an Ezer woman in her own right. And we see that in the work that she did. She comes to us from Joppa, or we meet her in Joppa anyway. And Joppa is along the Judean coastline. It's in the coastal plain, and if you vaguely recall the story of a prodigal prophet, the prophet Jonah jumped ship in Joppa. So that's what Joppa is best known for. Joppa is largely a Gentile city. It had a small Jewish contingent, but it was largely a Gentile city. And so this is where we meet Tabitha. If you have your Bible with you or an app, you can join me in the book of Acts as we introduce, as Luke, the author, introduces us to her. We find her in Acts chapter 9, beginning at the 36th verse. So Acts 9, 36. Luke tells us, "Now in Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha, which translated into Greek is called Dorcas. This woman was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity, which she continually did. And it happened at that time that she fell sick and died. And when they had washed her body, they laid it in an upper room. Since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard that Peter was there in Joppa, in Lydda, sent two men to him, imploring him, 'Do not delay in coming to us.' So Peter arose and went with them. When he arrived, they brought him into the upper room, and all the widows stood beside him, weeping and showing all the tunics and the garments that Dorcas used to make while she was with them. But Peter sent them all out, and he knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, 'Tabitha, arise.' And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand and raised her up, and calling the saints and widows, he presented her alive. It became known all over Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. And Peter stayed many days in Joppa with a tanner named Simon." So this is situated in the book of Acts, but in this transitional space between the gospel going from Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And so we are outside Jerusalem and we are in Judea, but more importantly, we are in the transition from Jew to Gentile. In the very next chapter, Peter is going to get called to the home of Cornelius. And so we find Tabitha, a Jewish disciple, in a Gentile city, and Luke tells us the kind of impact that she has. The most obvious or the most important descriptor that Luke uses to introduce her is disciple. She is the only woman in the New Testament who is specifically called a disciple. That this word is metitria, and it means someone who follows another person or another way of life, who submits to the discipline or the teaching of that leader. She is the only woman who gets that nod. And I want you to notice that she is not introduced as the wife of someone. She's not introduced as the mother of someone. She's introduced as a disciple. Too often, especially, I hope I don't step on anybody's toes, but I've been known to do that. So especially in evangelicalism, we tend to say that the highest calling of any woman is to be a wife and a mother. That is simply not true. The highest calling of any woman is to be a disciple. It's the highest calling of any man is to be a disciple. And Luke uses this term a little more liberally than the 12. He calls Ananias a disciple, the man that Paul was sent to after he was blinded on the road to Damascus. He calls Timothy a disciple as Paul picks him up to take him on the missionary journey. And here he calls Tabitha a disciple. She was known as a learner and she was known as a liver of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I'm glad that Bill mentioned Mary and Martha, because I really do think that that's a false dichotomy. I don't think that we are to be either or. I think that we are to hold in tension both and. And that's what Tabitha did. She held in tension both the learning part of being a disciple and the living part of being a disciple. You might recall what Jesus had to say about what it takes to be a disciple. And in the Gospel of Luke, same writer as the book of Acts, the Gospel of Luke in the 14th chapter, Jesus says, beginning at the 26th verse, "If anyone comes after me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, and yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." And then Luke gives a couple examples. And he says, "For which one of you, when he goes to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe it may begin to ridicule him and saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish it.'" Then he gives another example of a king who has to evaluate whether or not he's going to go out to battle. And then finally in verse 33, Jesus sums it up and he says, "So then, none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all his own possessions." Which is really interesting as we consider the cost of being a disciple, that how we hold the possessions that we possess, that we own, really can reflect what kind of depth our discipleship really has. And Tabitha would be an example of a woman who held her possessions with open hands, who held her possessions as an offering at the throne of Jesus. So my question to you is, are you a disciple? In our church culture in the West, especially in the South where we live, is Bible study, Bible study, Bible study. And certainly that is where our discipleship grows out of. But if we're in Bible study just for information, then we're there for the wrong reasons. We should be in Bible study for transformation. If our life doesn't look any different after being in the Word, then it is not effective. We have oftentimes focused so much on salvation by grace that we have missed the value of good deeds. So my question again is, are you a disciple? Tabitha was a woman of charity. She was charitable. Luke tells us that she was continually doing acts of kindness and charity. And so we see that she is using her time and her talent and her treasures to make a difference in the lives of these widows. She is a successful seamstress. She is a tailor. She probably spins her own wool and she probably dyes her own wool. And she is abounding in acts of kindness and good deeds. She is continually doing them. It overflows out of her love of Jesus. Her acts overflow out of her commitment to Christ. Paul tells the Galatians, "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all, but especially to those who are of the household of faith." I imagine that Tabitha was not only blessing those in the household of faith, but I also suspect, being in a Gentile city, that she also sold her wares to the many Gentile patrons, the many Gentile customers of that city. And she did this for widows. When we hear the word widow, we tend to think of women whose husbands have died, and certainly they are widows. But in the first century context, a woman whose husband was off to war was called a widow because he wasn't in the home. A woman who had come on hard times, had hard times befall on them, were referred to as widows. And so she has taken her time, talent, and treasures and lavished them on those who are the most vulnerable, those who have no support from anywhere else. This was not a glamorous ministry. She was not a Peter. She was a woman caring for the least of these. Perhaps Tabitha is who James, the biological brother of Jesus, had in mind when he said, "Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of God is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress." But James knew very well the plight of widows. After all, that's what Mary was. 5 times in the letter to Titus, Paul references the value of good deeds. They are must-dos in the eyes of Paul. He says to Titus, be an example of good deeds. Those in leadership have to set the example of good deeds. But then he also goes on to say to the rest of the body of believers, you have been redeemed for this purpose, so that you would be redeemed from lawless deeds and become zealous for good deeds. Finally, he sums it up, Paul does, and says to Titus, those who have believed in God will be careful to engage in good deeds. There is an intentionality of the believer to engage in good deeds. So what do you have to give? Yes, we can sing in the choir. Yes, we can hand out bulletins at the door. Yes, we can serve communion and take the offering. But what are we doing outside the walls of our church to engage in good deeds in a zealous way to reach the least of these? John Chrysostom used Tabitha as an example of the kind of treasure that we should all aspire to. He wrote, this is the kind of treasure that Tabitha had. It was not her house that proclaimed her wealth, nor the walls, nor the stones, nor the pillars, but the bodies of the widows that she furnished with dress, and their tears that were shed, and death that played the runaway, and life that came back again. Let us also make unto ourselves such like treasures. Let us build up for ourselves such like houses. In this way, we shall have God for our fellow worker, and we ourselves shall be workers together with him. What can be equal to this in respect both of utility and of glory? That's the kind of treasure that lasts. That's the kind of treasure that outlasts us. That's the kind of treasure that leads to a legacy. And Tabitha left a legacy. To my knowledge, she is the only character in the Bible that we don't meet until she's already dead. So Tabitha was one of many people who came to early deaths. I suspect it was an early death because they seemed to be surprised by it. They don't send for Peter while she's ill. They send for Peter after she's already dead. So I imagine that she was not an elderly woman because her death seemed to come as a surprise. And in the first century, there's a reason that we see a lot of widows, because death was such a common occurrence. Without antibiotics, without all of the modern medicine that we have today, not to mention war, there was death everywhere. So why Tabitha? Why was her death so significant that she was worthy of Peter being called to come? The work she did with the widows apparently was so powerful that they were in tears and grieving immensely for her. One of the reasons I suspect she didn't have a husband is because we don't see her husband and children grieving for her. We see those who benefited from her work, benefited in such a way that leads me to believe that she did more than clothe them. I also suspect that the good deeds and charity that she abounded in were also feeding them and caring for their emotional needs as well. She had an amazing impact on the Joppa community, both in her life and especially in her death. The miracle of raising her back caused many to believe in that community. She clearly had the respect and love of the whole Christian community in Joppa. After all, the two men went to go get Peter to come to her aid. Her legacy was immensely valuable to that community. And that's the kind of thing that we should all really consider. What kind of legacy do you want to leave? I met Diane Talbert in the fall of 2018, and we immediately became friends. Diane was the director of the Church Under the Bridge, a charity, a church for the unsheltered in San Antonio. She was the kind of woman who was tough and kind at the same time. That ministry clothed people on the streets. It sheltered them when the temperatures dropped below freezing. It offered food 3 nights a week and church services. I partner with them to do medical and dental clinics there twice a year. She provided hygiene and library books and all kinds of practical resources to sustain people on the streets. When COVID hit, when other people shut down, she ramped up. She went from feeding them 3 nights a week to feeding them 7 nights a week. And she was amazing at building church partnerships and gathering volunteers to do that work with her. Many of us volunteer our time and talents to coach Little League teams and be on the PTA. But few of us actually make it our life's work. Diane was a rare woman. She went to be with the Lord after a very brief illness, after a very brief battle with cancer last month. And she left an amazing legacy. People from all over the city, our city government officials to the homeless, all showed up to honor her in her death. What kind of legacy do you want to leave? Use your holy imagination with me one more time. What if Tabitha was not only a model of discipleship for us, not only a model of charity for us, but what if Tabitha was one of the 500 witnesses to the resurrected Jesus that Paul refers to in 1 Corinthians 15. Better yet, what if she was one of the other women that Luke refers to in Luke, the Gospel, chapter 8? What if she had been part of Jesus' entourage in his Galilean ministry, walking side by side with Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Susanna, and Mary, the mother of Jesus? Perhaps she even made Jesus his clothing. Perhaps she was the tailor behind the seamless tunic that he wore on the cross. It's not that far-fetched. Cyril, the Archbishop of Jerusalem, some 300 years later, writes, "A witness to the resurrection of Jesus is Tabitha, who was in his name herself raised from the dead. Now, how shall we disbelieve that Christ is risen when even his very name raised the dead?" The Archbishop of Jerusalem positions her at least as a witness of the resurrection, which makes me also believe that perhaps she had a personal relationship with Peter if she was part of that Galilean ministry. So that would also help explain why this woman, Peter, rushed to help. Most of us are not Peter's or Paul's or even Deborah's or Esther's. Most of us are fairly minor characters in the big stories of the world. Most of us don't make headlines. But these are minor characters in the Bible that ought not be overlooked. 2 Timothy 3:16 reminds us that all teaching, all scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction and training in righteousness, so that every man, woman, and child of God can be sufficiently equipped for every good work. When we pass over minor characters, we run the risk of not being as sufficiently trained for every good work as we might otherwise be, because minor characters make major impacts. She mattered to the widows and to the community of Joppa even more than Peter did. And so do you. So do I. So do all of us who are fairly minor characters who never make the headlines. The humble acts that we do in the name of God, God sees. So what are we going to take away from today, from this character of Tabitha? First and foremost, God calls women to be disciples too. That is our number one calling. I ought to strive to be a better learner and a better liver of the gospel. God calls us to use our time, talents, and treasures to serve others sacrificially in his name. How often do we say we don't have time? But maybe if we stopped binge watching something, we would. Next, our relationship with Christ should actually transform our relationships with other people, like Tabitha's relationship with the widows. And finally, outlive your life. Be intentional about the legacy that you want to leave. So I appreciate you giving me your attention. I appreciate you letting me share with you a woman that I highly respect and look very much forward to meeting one day in person.